Content warnings for this special episode of the Hornet Media Podcast include murder, substance abuse, mentions of sexual abuse, mentions of suicidal behavior, and mild, unsavory language. Audience discretion is advised. On November 3rd of 2023, Sam Morgan of the Hornet Media team conducted an interview at Bryant High School with Amy Williams. This interview served as the primary source of information for this episode. Additional sources can be found in the episode's description.
On July 13, 1987, Amy Williams, daughter of James Williams and Gwen Williams, was born in Dallas, Texas. 17 years later, she signed her name on a plea bargain to serve 60 years in prison. On this special episode of the Hornet Media Podcast, we will explore the events that led to her incarceration and ask the question, is someone ever too far gone for redemption? Amy was raised in and attended a private school in Little Rock, Arkansas for the first 10 years of her life. On March 1st, 1997, 16 tornadoes were spawned in Arkansas. The Williams family fled to their bathroom for shelter. After the tornado had passed, the only room left standing in their house was the bathroom. Following the destruction of their home, the Williams family moved to Saline County. Amy's parents attempted to keep her in the private school that she attended, but it eventually proved simply unfeasible. At the age of 14, she started attending Bryant High School.
It was a culture shock going from a private school that's very structured to a public school that is not. I come from a good family. I'm the only kid. I was raised in church, softball, very involved with my family. Don't come from any history of addiction. Neither one of my parents were, you know, in any type of drug activity. They didn't drink. I kind of was sheltered growing up, and I think that that played a big part in my future choices.
Shortly after the beginning of her attendance at Bryant, upon getting off the school bus on her way home, she was invited to smoke a joint by a fellow classmate. Amy claims that she was so sheltered she didn't even know what that was, so she agreed.
It wasn't too long after that, it went from smoking weed every day after school to popping pills. Then I started snorting cocaine, and I didn't even know what addiction was. My parents never brought it up because they never struggle with it. And I think that they were trying to protect me by not making me aware of things, but almost in a sense that makes us ignorant to it.
Amy's addiction quickly led to more rebellious behaviors, staying out late, stealing her parents' car, and stealing her parents' money, to name a few.
It's almost like you get so far in it that you feel like you can't come out of it. Because I remember several times, you know, being at parties and stuff, and I remember like looking around at all these people that were high, and I remember having thoughts of like, this is not normal, this isn't okay. But it was like I was already in it.
This was when Amy's parents started to realize that something was wrong. After a perceived attempted suicide, Amy's parents took her to Baptist Health. Her stay lasted 2 weeks, during which she was prescribed trazodone and Wellbutrin, both antidepressants, trazodone also serving as a sleeping medication. However, she did not continue taking this medication after being sent home. Amy continued her substance abuse upon being returned home, and her parents continued to try and help her.
We had like a counseling session, a family session, and my parents were sitting in the room, and I'll never forget, my dad just broke down crying, and he was like, "What can we do to help you?" He was like, "What can we do? Like, tell us, we will do anything to help you stop." And I just didn't say anything because I didn't know. You know, I don't think they couldn't have loved me more. They couldn't have provided for me more. They couldn't have sat down and talked to me anymore. They couldn't have surrounded me with better people. Like, it's just so weird because I'm like, what could have happened that would have led me down a different path? And what it comes down to is, it was my choice.
One night, after an argument with her mother, Amy stole her mother's car to go to a party. At this party, she smoked marijuana that was laced with PCP. The next morning, she woke up in the back of her mother's car in a Circle K parking lot covered in urine, with no recollection of how she got there. She drove herself home and was greeted with both of her parents crying on the couch. Her parents then filed a family offense petition with the courts. This led to her being admitted to Pinnacle Point Hospital, her stay lasting 6 months.
It was so traumatic. I watched a 10-year-old little boy get admitted because he would have screaming fits, and they would inject him with Thorazine, and they would strap him down, and that was the only way they could get him to quit screaming. And I just remember seeing that and thinking how sad that they're just medicating these kids. And there wasn't a single one of us that was in Pinnacle Point that wasn't on something.
During her stay, Amy was diagnosed with manic depression, now commonly known as bipolar disorder. She was then prescribed Prozac, among other medication, to treat her diagnosis. Amy attended a group tour of the McPherson unit of Newport, Arkansas, listening to a panel of inmates speak. The purpose of the stay was to scare Amy and the other patients straight to dissuade them from having to go back to prison. This proved unsuccessful for Amy. During her stay at Pinnacle Point, Amy's parents had separated due to the stress of her behavior. Upon being released, she decided to live with her mother.
I wasn't even home a few days before my mom noticed a difference. She said, Amy, you're not okay. You're not the same person. She said, I really think this Prozac has you zombied out. She's like, you have no emotion. And I just remember kind of thinking that she was right, but I really didn't care. I was just so detached.
Amy's mother took her to the doctor, who prescribed her an increase of her dosage of Prozac. Less than a month after being released from Pinnacle Point, Amy had already returned to her old vices.
I remember, like, the neighbor across the street, him and his mom and his little sister lived there. Well, I don't even remember how, but we ended up finding out that we both got high, and I ended up smoking with him one day. And so I started getting high again. You know, it didn't stop, but I hid it again from my parents for a while. And then it got out of hand, and me and my mom started fighting a lot because she wouldn't let me go out, you know, and I wanted to go out, and she wouldn't let me. And so me and her would just always fight. And, you know, I think back, there were many nights that my mom, you know, I would just leave. I would run away. And I would come home to her just crying in her bed, you know. And that's, I just think back, and I can't fathom what I put my mom through. But she felt like she couldn't handle me anymore. And that's how I ended up going to my dad's.
On July 30th, 2003, Amy was woken up by her father before he went to work. Her father made sure she took her medication and then left. Amy went back to sleep until the afternoon.
It's hard to explain it other than I was just like covered in darkness. Like I was having very awful thoughts about harming myself and harming other people. And that was so out of character for me. It was like this thought process that wasn't right. And I remember the thought came that I should shoot my dad. And I always say that something should have triggered in my heart that said, that's not normal. That's not okay. You love your dad, because I was a daddy's girl. Me and my dad were very, very close. And so for that thought to even come, something should have clicked inside of me that was like, this isn't okay, but it didn't.
She took her father's gun and practiced shooting it all day while her father was at work. After James Williams arrived home, while going to his chair, he was asked to turn around by Amy. He was then shot in the back.
The sounds that he was making sounded like he was hurting. And in my mind, I was like, he's suffering. And I know that that's sick. And it's evil and it's all the things, but in my 16-year-old mind, it was just like this like knee-jerk reaction was that he was suffering and I just needed to do it.
Amy then shot her father once more in the head. She stole her father's keys and wallet, then took his truck to an ATM in order to get money to fill it up with gas. While driving, she passed her mother, who pulled her to the side of the road to talk to Amy. Amy told her mother to call 911 because something had happened to her father. Whenever the police arrived at the house, James Williams had already passed away. When questioned, Amy told the police that someone had broken into the house. After being brought into the interrogation room, she quickly confessed to the murder. The prior account is what Amy Williams told us during the interview that took place on November 3rd, 2023. Amy has told her story many other times. Some of the information adds details to the story or conflicts with other accounts. The following is what Amy told the Arkansas Circuit Courts in 2005 about the events of July 30th. At about 12:30 p.m., Amy woke up and spoke on the phone with her father shortly after. She then began to form a plan to kill her father if he came home upset because she wasn't going to take it. Amy admitted that her father never hit her, but would call her a bad kid due to her drug abuse. At around 1:30 p.m., Amy took a deer rifle from her father's closet, loaded it, put on earmuffs, and fired one round in the backyard for practice. Afterwards, she reloaded the rifle and returned it to the closet. Once her father arrived home, he sat down to watch television. Amy took the loaded rifle and the earmuffs and put them in her bedroom. She then asked her father to stand with his back toward her room. After he complied, Amy put on the earmuffs, got the rifle, and shot him. She then took her father's keys and wallet. She drove away in his vehicle and used his ATM card to withdraw $150 from his account before being located by her mother and Bryant. When questioned by the police as to why she killed her father, she told them that he pissed her off. This remains on her record to this day. When asked about the discrepancies in her story, such as where and how her father was shot, Amy told us that she was lying to the police for a time after committing the act. While waiting for her trial, Amy's mother never left her side. She was issued a public defender and claims that he tried to persuade her to say that her father sexually abused her, to which she refused. The public defender came to Amy and her mother with a plea bargain for 60 years in prison, claiming that if they didn't agree, she would be sentenced to life in prison. Amy signed the plea bargain and arrived at the McPherson unit at the age of 18, the same prison she toured while being treated at Pinnacle Point.
By the time the court process and all that was through, I had just turned 18 when I walked into prison. And that's a scary thing because all you see is what's on TV and the movies. And so I walk in not knowing what my life is going to look like. All I could think of was that I was going to die in that place.
While in prison, Amy continued to struggle with substance abuse. After many years, she earned an associate's degree in theology and found her faith in Christianity after breaking her addiction. In 2017, Arkansas passed a statute that states that juveniles convicted of murder in the first degree are subject to a sentence of life with eligibility for parole after 25 years. Since Amy was not sentenced to life, she was told that it did not apply to her. She continued to fight for her freedom for 4 more years. Amy applied for clemency, and the governor of Arkansas at the time, Asa Hutchinson, complied.
I feel like I live that moment. I feel like God literally parted waters. You know, it doesn't make sense that the clemency process went through because you have to go in front of a parole board and then they have to approve you not once but twice before it even gets to the governor. And then the governor has a board that screens it and then they have to approve it before it even gets to the governor and then he has to have the final say so. Well, then he can technically say, I'm going to grant you clemency. And then you go back in front of the parole board and they still can deny you after the governor. So you're talking about like 6 different steps of being able to be approved through. And one of those steps is that the county that your crime happened in, every prosecutor, judge, sheriff's department, all of that have to say whether or not they're going to protest. And I will never forget reading that letter from the governor, and he said not a single person protested. And that means the same judges, the same officers, the same prosecutor, like everybody that sentenced me did not protest for me to come home.
Amy was released on parole on January 4th of 2022 after 19 years. She now works for a nonprofit pregnancy resource center. Amy has a child named after her father and claims that she has been completely sober since she was released.
We are not in control of the outcome of our choices. Like, we are in control of our choices. We make our choices, but we can't control the outcome. So yeah, I can choose to get high, but I can't control what the next thing is gonna be. There are so many times I could have died, and that wasn't the choice I would have been choosing, you know? But I think just remembering that we are so tunnel vision, especially as teenagers, that we're only seeing the moment, but it's so much is impacted by every choice that we make. And if we can just like stop and really process that choice that we're about to make and think about more than just the moment. And teenage life is hard because we do just want to fit in. We want to be a part of something. And I think if you don't have direction in what that is, you can be pulled in a negative way. And so I think it's just finding your identity in something that's positive.
The Hornet Media Podcast is a production of the Bryant High School TV program in Bryant, Arkansas.